It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Cheryl Wudun is a journalist and a business executive. She, along with her husband, journalist Nicholas Kristof, have worked to shine a light on what they have identified as the central moral challenge of this century, the oppression of women and girls around the world. Their most recent book is A Path Appears, which has just been released in paperback. And she is speaking today at noon as part of the 2015 Borlaug Dialogue International Symposium in Des Moines in conjunction with the World Food Prize. She is on the line with me now. Hello, Cheryl.
Hello, Charity. Nice to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here. And I know you've been making this case for a long time, but for people who aren't familiar with your work or with your argument, tell me why you believe that the oppression of women and girls is the central moral challenge of this century.
In Half the Sky, we actually talked about this in the sense that if you focus on women, there are enormous ways that you can successfully lift people out of poverty. And the reason that it's not just a successful way is that we are losing the potential for so many women. I was actually skeptical when we first started out in this investigation, but when I discovered that there were anywhere between 60 million and 100 million missing females from the global population, and these are the results of really sophisticated demographers doing the work, that number really shocked me and woke me up to the reality. That this is a huge challenge for the world. 60 million people, let's take that lower figure, that's the size of a Germany.
And they're just missing?
They are missing from the global population because they've been, if you will, discriminated to death. They are lost through many different reasons, whether it is women die in childbirth, they die trying to, give birth, they die because of... they're beaten to death, or there's all sorts of reasons. The acid is thrown in their face, and they may, die from that. They die from often, and this is probably the largest number, they are aborted before they're even born. When many cultures, parents discover that the fetus is a girl and they want a boy, partly because there are new techniques, they just can get an abortion. So, but the numbers are staggering, accumulated over the years.
You have also pointed out in sharing many stories over the years that girls are discriminated against in ways that may seem insignificant, but do add to these numbers. For example, in families where resources are scarce, they will pour their resources into the boys. So in families where starvation is a possibility, the girls are far more likely to succumb to starvation than their brothers.
That is the case in many cultures. It's clear that when you have scarce resources, you have to spend them very carefully. And in many parts of societies where tradition is extremely important and where they do believe that the man will carry on the succession, will be the only one in society to be able to have a job or a future, then that those resources are poured into the boys. So one can understand that, but I think what we have to do around the world is to change those attitudes. And changing attitudes requires that all people in society embrace this change, not just women. This is not a women's issue. This is a social issue. So men and women have to work together to try and bring about this change.
I want to return to the idea that this is the central moral challenge of the 21st century, because you identified the central moral challenge of the 19th century as being slavery. And today, with sex trafficking, modern slavery is actually as big an issue by your accounts as what we think of as slavery in the past.
Yes. Again, the numbers bear this out. We really, when we were looking into this investigation, it was pretty stunning to think that something that we've been raised upon in terms of slavery in this country, which looms huge as one of the biggest blots in our history, we're actually suffering through something even worse. In the peak of the slave trade, there were probably 80,000 slaves that were who were transported from Africa to the New World, 80,000 per year. Now, and look, statistics are really hard to come by because nothing is reported, and the State Department tries to keep tabs on, but in some statistics they have been able to find that there were 800,000 people trafficked for various reasons, trafficked across international borders. That does not even include, this is per year, and that does not even include those people who are trafficked within borders of a country. Even in the United States, there's trafficking going on within borders from California to Houston. It's remarkable numbers.
Since you first published Half the Sky, a lot of things have happened. There was a piece on Morning Edition this morning about how lives for so many girls in Afghanistan have changed in recent years, that many more girls have access to education and some of the opportunities that, that you're talking about. Where do you see the most progress in the years when you've been writing about and researching this issue?
Progress in terms of?
Women getting more access to education and opportunity.
Oh, there's huge progress. I mean, just huge. The number of girls now and children in school, in primary school, is very much close to where we want to be, very close compared to the past. Poverty has been really improved. In the 1980s, there were maybe 50% of the developing world was living under a dollar or two a day. Now that number is maybe 17%. We've really come a long way, and child mortality has really receded. Children who die before they reach the age of five, that number has dropped enormously. So we've had incredible progress. In terms of history, we are far less violent a society than centuries ago. Just remember that Alexander Hamilton, in our country, our own country, died in a duel. We don't do that anymore. We are there's great progress.
When we are thinking about and people who care about these issues often, look at different causes around the world, and American money can make a big difference when you look at how much money it might take to give a girl in an African country an opportunity to go to school or something like that. And I know you have witnessed American money flowing into, say, a school in China and making it possible for girls to stay in school and continue their education and then possibly have opportunities later on. But it strikes me, and you write about this in A Path Appears and in the documentary series that went along with it, that it's much harder for Americans to look at the problems in this country. What do we need to be looking at here?
Oh, there are just tremendous number of challenges here in the U.S. as well. We have poverty, and people in the low-income brackets, it's been well stated before, haven't made much progress in the last decade, whereas the wealthy have. The amount of inequality here in the U.S., people know the facts quite well. The top 1% here in the U.S. own about equivalent amount as the bottom 50%. Most of the gains that we've had in the past few years have gone to the wealthy. So the facts are pretty clear. But it's not so much the gap in equality of income that is the problem as much as the gap in opportunity. We really want to be able to give these children here in the U.S. An opportunity to shine and to have a good life. And I think that what research has shown us, and again, it's data-driven, it's evidence-based, research has shown that when you intervene early and focus on early childhood education, you can actually change the trajectory of a kid's life far more successfully than you can if you have to intervene later on when they're teenagers or even when they're adults and when they're in jail. It's much more costly, as we know. We look at all the jails. They're filled with the people who unfortunately have gone the wrong path.
And of course, poverty affects boys and girls in the United States. But it seems that in many ways, girls are at greater risk. And of course, we were talking about sex trafficking earlier. That's a reality in the United States as well. I mean, what do you see as the greatest risks for young girls in the U.S.?
Well, the risks are really big for both. I wouldn't necessarily say they're greater for girls. I mean, you know, we look at the jails, most of them are men.
Right.
But there are great risks for both girls and boys in the U.S., and we need to focus early. There are many, the most important thing is focusing on the kid when they're young because their brain is developing at that age. And if you ignore that brain development, then it's just you don't get that window back. And so trying to educate the kid, trying to get them exposed to reading and to talking and to seeing things as much as stimuli, which that is extremely important. You know, when they grow old, unfortunately, if they haven't had that experience, then, you know, the boys are just going to get into join gangs, and the girls may be exposed to trafficking. And those are just very difficult situations to extract women from. In A Path to Beers, we talk about solutions. There's a wonderful solution in Nashville run by a pastor named Becca Stevens. She has to create a safe house for these women so that they can actually, after they've been forced into this prostitution for years and years, you pull them out, but it takes a long time for them to overcome what they've been through. There's psychological damage in addition to physical damage. So it takes a long time also to teach them skills for them to cope in the real world that isn't using their sex as a means of living.
So many people who read your work are moved by it and want to make a difference. And you are trying to give people the tools to really make a difference. But what can one individual do? Where should I turn?
Well, in A Path to Beers, we have many different tools, and we discuss ways that individuals can make a difference. And what I tell people in general is to think about what you care about. You have to first choose an issue that matters to you, because otherwise you're just not going to stick with it. And if you do it with some friends, that's even better, because then you'll be able to talk about it. You can discuss the issues. You can figure out how you want to do this together, and it's much more fun when you do it with a bunch of friends. But, you know, pick a part of the world that you care about. You know, it could be home. It could be abroad. It could be in your own state. It could be, you know, in another one of the poorer parts of the U.S. And then pick an issue, and then find an organization that is focusing on that region, that issue, and bring some friends along. And there's some organizations. We have a list of dozens of organizations in the back of the book that you can choose from. You know, you might want to help out in education. There are lots of nonprofit groups that are trying to help out with early childhood education or education of girls, or maybe it's empowerment. Maybe it's giving at-risk teenagers the means to learn financial independence. There are all sorts of things.
What gives you hope right now? Because I'm sure as you cover these issues, it can get very depressing, very difficult.
Well, I think the fact that we've had so much progress and that you can even make a difference in one person's life, that's what's really encouraging. And you can see, if I could just, you know, I mean, I wish people will see, I'm going to show some really great images and videos today. There are just, physical, visceral examples of, you know, young girls who can be turned around.
Can you describe one for me?
Well, you'll have to come.
I don't think most of us are going to be able to make it in the next hour, but can you tell me just one story?
We describe Eunice, who is a girl who was born and raised in the slums of Kenya. And if you think the slums in the U.S. are bad, you go to Kenya. Rats infested everywhere. I mean, she has learned English, which obviously is not her first language. And she is so poised, and she created a poem that she recites about empowerment and choosing your career and going after it in the most ambitious way. Boy, I would not want to compete with her.
What's next for you? I mean, this Half the Sky really set you on a mission that, has continued with A Path Appears. Where do you go next?
Well, you know, we're not really going anywhere. I mean, I do want to say that the credit for so much of this work goes to the people who are in the field. I'm not in the field. And, you know, I really do admire people who are basically like in refugee camps feeding, you know, people, trying to educate the refugees. And you know, my heart goes out to those people who are bringing clean water to areas of Ethiopia or Uganda where they don't have clean water. So, you know, we're just trying to spread the word and hope that we will touch people who will also try and use some of their own skills and talents to help.
Well, Cheryl Wudun, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you.
Cheryl Wudun is a journalist and a business executive. She, along with her husband, journalist Nicholas Kristof, has been working to shine a light on what they've identified as the central moral challenge of the century, the oppression of women and girls around the world. Together, they wrote the book Half the Sky, and their most recent book is A Path Appears, which has just been released in paperback. She's speaking today at noon as part of the 2015 Borlaug Dialogue International Symposium, which is held every year in conjunction with the awarding of the World Food Prize. There are many other speakers who are in town this week in Des Moines. Also, the World Food Prize, of course, will be awarded tonight in Des Moines. And many people have an opportunity to attend that event or watch it on Iowa Public Television this evening. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We have production assistance from Patrick Linane. You can get in touch with us anytime. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'd love to get your feedback on things you've heard on the program in the past. We also love to get your suggestions for things you'd like to hear on the show in the future. If you know someone who has a great story to tell, we want to hear about it. Again, that's talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can also follow us on Twitter @IPRTalk. I'm also there @CharityNebby, and you can also course, communicate with us by Twitter as well. I'm Charity Nebby. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Tomorrow is Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa.